Chapter 10, Dear Octopus. Many years ago I heard a play broadcast by the BBC with the enigmatic title of this chapter. It was written by Dodie Smith and was about the fortunes of a typical family with plenty of undercurrents and disagreements which met at Christmas for a family reunion. I forget how it all went on, but remember that it ended very amicably with somebody proposing a toast to the family, that dear octopus, from whose tentacles we never quite escape, nor ever really want to. It has occurred to me that this could also be true of the spiritual family to which we all belong. The Christadelphian family spread worldwide is very like an ordinary family in this respect. It has its disagreements and its undercurrents too, yet still most of us will never really want to escape from its embrace. Blood is thicker than water, is a saying about the ties of human families, and in the case of the Christadelphian family, the blood which binds us is of even greater power. It is a curious fact that Christadelphian traditions and methods of conducting their affairs are much the same wherever one goes throughout the world. In Melbourne, London, Los Angeles, Durban, Vancouver or Birmingham, one hears the same stories, listens to the same kind of prayers, in the same traditional phrases, and the same clichés are employed. People lie on the same beds of sickness. Rather revolting phrase. Dispersed are their several homes. How many have they got? And have a goodly number at their fraternal gatherings. All good families have their repertoire of family jokes, a kind of esoteric humour which an outsider would not understand. We always tend to see the past in a funny hat, and the family scrapbook will usually provoke pictures and stories which either make us laugh or cry. The Christadelphian scrapbook is full of such pictures and stories, some clearly authentic, some apocryphal, and many embroidered with oft-retelling. In this chapter I hope to recapture some of these stories, not just for amusement's sake, but because they are a part of our Christadelphianism. For although we take ourselves very seriously in public, there are few brethren who have not an amusing story to tell in private, and if we can still laugh at ourselves, there is hope for us yet. And as we all know, laughter and tears are never far apart when we are engaged in perusing the family album. Most of the older members and many of the younger we'll have heard of the brother who, called on to read Daniel chapter 3, got boggled by the continual repetition of the list of musical instruments, the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music. He struggled through the list the first time, managed it successfully the second time, but when it came up again for a third time, he is said to have dismissed it with the rather impatient words, "And the same band, brethren." I have personally heard this related of specific occasions in three different ecclesias in totally different parts of the country by brethren who vowed that they were there. Another popular story concerns a brother who was speaking at a meeting in the north of England. Now, anybody who has been invited to minister at some of the northern ecclesias will know that it is almost a point of honour for the sister to prepare an enormous tea for the speaker, often going to a great deal of trouble. On this occasion, however, our brother would not partake, much to the chagrin of the sister, who had gone to great length to lay on a wonderful spread. He excused himself, saying that when he was speaking, he was better without it. She was naturally disappointed, but couldn't get him to change his mind. After he had delivered his lecture, however, a sister sitting next to her asked her, after the manner of Christadelphian audiences, "What did you think of him tonight?" To which she tartly replied, "He might as well have had his tea." Again in the north of England, a brother had given his lecture on Sunday evening, and as he left the meeting room, a homely elderly sister thanked him for his address and said how she had enjoyed it. He was not unnaturally pleased to have this little commendation until, not quite out of earshot, he heard her say to her companion, "I tell 'em all that, you know, it encourages 'em." Father Bill Gillingham of Bournemouth told me the following story a long time ago, which illustrates a sense of the ridiculous which occasionally brightens our meetings. It was the Bible class, and as often happens in seaside meetings, he found himself next to a brother who was a visitor and unknown to him. When it came to the last hymn, the visitor, who was on the outside seat, was misled into thinking that the hymn was ending, when there was another verse to come at the top of the opposite page. He closed his book and laid it on a nearby table as the verse ended, thinking that the prayer would follow. Seeing what had happened, Brother Bill passed his own hymn book, intending to share the last verse with the mistaken visitor, who, however, thought he wanted him to place it on the table with his own. So he took it away, closed it, and laid it alongside on the table. So, when the organist struck up for the final verse, neither of them had a book. It has often been remarked upon that Christadelphians have a peculiar language of their own, which might easily baffle an outsider. One sister I know compiled a list of some of the weird expressions current among us, which never failed to amuse her puckish humour. We talk, for example, of an entertaining sister, meaning the speaker's hostess for his visit. "Entertainment next week will be in the hands of," says the recording brother, and an uninitiated visitor could be forgiven in thinking that the sister in question would be performing some concert act. I recall a brother telephoned me some time ago about an appointment I had to speak at his ecclesia, and in course of conversation he inquired, "Is there anything we can do by way of entertaining you?" I said, "How about a bit of ventriloquism?" But I doubt he saw the joke, and imagine him going back to his wife, scratching his head and saying, "Funny chap, Brother Richardson. He wanted to know if I was a ventriloquist." "Help yourself to a Bible companion" is a notice used with the Bible exhibition, which could be misunderstood when the display is staffed by some of our attractive young sisters, as it was when we had it at Hereford. It was the same puckish sister who pointed it out to me. "Help yourself to a Bible companion." She or he was taken through by Brother So-and-so would likewise puzzle anybody who didn't know that it meant that the person had received instruction for baptism. And it sometimes added that she came through with flying colours, meaning that she'd passed the scrutiny of the examining brethren. A sister wife is the wife of a brother, but we never refer to a brother husband. I wonder why not. As for theological phraseology, we have a wide variety of expressions which, although a convenient shorthand for ourselves, must bewilder any casual visitor to our lectures. Such phrases as the Gogian invasion, a post-millennial revolt, the little horn powers, the 10 toes of the image, the mother of harlots, and many more similar, will have a strange ring in the ears of the uninitiated, and should not ever be used without some explanation. Brother Dennis Gillett and I have often commented on the unconsciously amusing things people have said to us, often after speaking at a meeting. He tells the story of a sister who came up to him after he delivered a lecture on the subject of sin, and said to him, "Brother Gillett, I enjoyed you tonight. You sounded as if you really knew your subject." I myself had a dear sister tell me after a fraternal gathering, "I did enjoy your address. It was such a treat to give our brains a rest." I hope she meant what I thought she meant. And there was a brother who confided in me that he liked my speaking because, he said, "You have the ability to make nothing interesting." Announcements by recording brethren are a source of continual amusement too. There is an authenticated record of one who announced after an election that the arranging brethren for the coming year will be hung at the back of the room. Another is said to have announced, "We have had a letter from Brother so-and-so, in which he says he's much better in health now. He says, since leaving my employment, I have got rid of the pain in the neck." And what would a visitor make of this announcement, which Dennis says he actually heard? "There are a lot of old Christadelphians under the table in the kitchen, and unless they are claimed, they will be put out with the dustbin." Newspaper notices have also contributed to our Christadelphian folklore. For example, the lecture notice reproduced in Punch, which read, "The truth about hell, a warm welcome to all." I am reliably informed that one ecclesiastic had a notice on the ecclesial board which one week read, "Subject so-and-so, speaker so-and-so, mumbles, hearing aids available." Another notice board gave the subject for next Sunday, "Where will you spend eternity? Okay, Blackpool." I understand that Brother Oscar Kay was a well-known speaker in that area. One of the famous characters in the Christadelphian body was Brother Charles Brighton, of whom there is a fund of stories, many emanating from himself. I heard recently of a brother who attacked him rather ferociously after he had spoken on the work of the Holy Spirit, stating angrily, "Whatever you say, I haven't got the Holy Spirit," to which Uncle Charlie replied, looking steadily at him, "That is quite obvious." He was known for giving very long addresses, and on one occasion was speaking at a fraternal gathering, where he was introduced by a president with an equal sense of humour. "I've heard it said," he announced, "that Brother Brighton can hold an audience enthralled for 3 hours. I now have much pleasure in inviting him to enthrall you for 30 minutes. Thinking of presidential introductions, one recalls a brother at Oxford who was given to rather extravagant flourishes when introducing the speaker, on one occasion saying something on the lines of, "And now, my dear friends, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you our speaker, our good friend and brother, Mr. At which point he realised that he'd quite forgotten his name, and had to lean over and say in a stage whisper, "What's your name?" So we could go on, rummaging in the old ecclesial scrapbook. As with all family albums, there's humour and sadness, happy memories that make us laugh, and some poignant and moving. I shall never forget being shown round the Christadelphian offices by the late Brother John Carter, who produced a document written by his predecessor, Brother C.C. Walker, which was found among his papers after his death. In it he set out a contract between himself and God when he first learned the truth, from reading the book Christmas Tree on a journey to Australia. He was so impressed that he determined to accept the teaching set out and to seek baptism into the Christadelphian faith if the Lord should allow him a safe journey. This resolve he had evidently felt constrained to put down in writing before the Lord, and he had signed it in his presence, almost as if it were a legal document. I, Charles C. Walker, and it was dated and signed, and put away as a record of his covenant with God. Nobody but he and God knew about it. It was not done to impress others, nor was it brought out later to be paraded before men as an evidence of his sanctity. Brother Carter simply stumbled across it in dealing with his private papers. But he told me, and I understand what he meant, that he could not hold the paper in his hand without trembling, in the awareness of a man who was so near to his Maker that he sat and wrote a deed of covenant in his very presence. As a personal footnote to this story, I was present when Brother C.C. Walker gave his last big fraternal address in Birmingham. It was a review of his experiences under the title of Retrospect, and Brother Carter followed on Prospect. CCW spoke for about an hour to a fascinated audience, and John Carter had the good sense and humility to restrict himself to about 10 minutes, not wishing to steal the old man's thunder. The point is, however, that in describing his conversion, Brother Walker referred to his voyage and how he had read Christendom Astray, which had been loaned to him, if I remember correctly, by his sister in Australia. He remarked that he checked every single reference with his Bible, and those familiar with the classic work of Robert Roberts will know what this would entail, and as a result determined to follow this way. But he never made a single mention of the document which embodied his firm resolution. That came to light after his death, which was to take place soon after this retrospect of his life. Another fragment from the past came to me when speaking at the Australian Biennial Conference in Melbourne in 1974. Those who have read Brother Roberts' diary of a voyage will perhaps recall that on his world cruise towards the end of his life, he recounted that he shared a cabin going to Australia with a young man named Watson. He was not a Christadelphian, but became an agreeable companion, and actually took the chair at some talks which Robert Roberts gave on board during the voyage. Needless to say, Brother Roberts did his best to influence him to the truth, and he later became a brother. Now, at the conference in Melbourne, two dear elderly ladies came up to me and said, "Brother Richardson, do you remember that Brother Robert shared a cabin with a young man named Watson?" I recalled it immediately, for I had fairly recently read the diary of a voyage and had been most impressed with it. "Well," said the good ladies, "we are his granddaughters." To say that I was delighted to meet them would be a gross understatement, for it was like a breath of the past, like a page from a family album coming suddenly to life. The seed sown in the mind of that young man sailing to a new life on the other side of the world in the 19th century was still bearing fruit in the lives of his grandchildren in the 20th century, and I was privileged to be in them, shaking hands with the past.